Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, and welcome to Everything is Fine, a podcast for women over 40. We are your hosts. I'm Kim France.
And I'm Jen Romolini.
And Jen, I have a couple questions to ask you because you had your birthday just the other day.
I did. I had my birthday just the other day. It was an excellent birthday.
What made it excellent?
You know, I don't even know. I feel like I just feel energetically it was good. I mean, I planned out some good things. I took really good care of myself over the weekend. You know, I did some self-care things. I got a new tattoo, which is an annual tradition for me since I was 45. I get a new tattoo every year on my birthday. And then I planned it really well, considering everything we've been talking about, like not wanting to see people. So not wanting to see people, but feeling overwhelmed a little bit socially. So I did a hike with some of my best friends on Sunday morning, which was my birthday. And we had, you know, it was just nice. And I got to hang out with friends, but not in like a boozy kind of restaurant way. And then I came home and I did a bunch of gardening, and my husband had given me presents, and I opened nice presents, one very nice present from you. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then I went out to dinner with my husband and kid. And then we watched like an old movie. I got a little high and we watched an old movie. It was just like a perfect day. I talked to a bunch of people I like, you know, it was just like, I felt very loved. I felt very chill. And I was just happy. I just had like a very happy day. I think the key to it being a good birthday was I didn't have a lot of expectations for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've had a good birthday this year too. I mean, I for a long time in my 50s, I would cry every year on my birthday.
Right, right.
But like, I don't know, maybe because I had a little scary health scare, I was feeling like, ooh, 58. All right, let's take it.
Totally. Totally.
Because this was like the big birthday before the big birthday for you. So in a way, it is a big birthday.
Well, there's no way that what I also was feeling very much like is there's no way the big birthday is going to be any good. Like it's highly unlikely with the anticipation of a big birthday. I'm going to be 50 next year in case anyone doesn't know this. But there's with the anticipation of the big birthday, they tend to be at best performatively good, you know, yeah. Like, cause you wind up like, there's so much pressure on it and what should you do? And you plan a big party or you don't, or you do so, like, no matter what, they wind up being kind of, anticlimactic, you know, at best kind of,
yeah.
I remember my 40th birthday. I had a big party and I remember being in the middle of that party and feeling really awkward. Like I like there was like a mariachi band playing and I was looking out at our backyard of like a bunch of our friends. We had been in LA at this point and it was really nice, but it was really overwhelming. And you know, it's just always weird turning a decade older, you know? So it was good. This one was good.
Yeah. I mean, I sort of feel like, you know, 60 looms so large that yeah. I'm going to be psyched for my next birthday because it isn't 60.
Yes. Yes. And then it's always like, once you're planning something and I'm so indecisive and it's like, should I do this? Should I do this? I don't know. Oh. And then the whole time, like, maybe I should have done that. You know, it's just a fucking mess. So yeah. Anyway, I had a good birthday. I really do recommend the tattoo situation, though. I'll say it. Because I do feel like I am taking back my body. As my body is changing, I'm defining what my body looks like in a little bit of a way. It feels like a rebellion against aging to some degree. I don't know. I don't know exactly what it's about, but I really like it.
I would say that is, it sounds completely legitimate. My tattoos, I think, were more straightforwardly midlife crisis tattoos.
Interesting. I mean, maybe that's what this is too, and I'm lying to myself. That's very possible.
No. I like your explanation. What are you going
to
say?
Something terrible happened on my birthday, though, which I texted you about briefly, but did not tell you the whole story. An old friend called me a psychopath on my birthday.
Did they call you on your birthday to tell you you were a psychopath?
Pretty much. Pretty much. And it's, it's a kind of long story with a lot of history in it. So I'm not going to get involved in the whole thing, but it's basically a person I knew really, really, really well when I was 19 and 20. And this person and I have the same birthday. And we had a very intense relationship, the way sometimes women have very intense relationships at 19 and 20. And there was a lot of damage done. And I think a lot of betrayal, I would argue, on both sides. I mean, she used to read my journal when we were roommates in college. So like that's some fucking betrayal. And I did sleep with a guy that she had a crush on. Okay, fair enough. You know, whatever. Like sins of 30 years ago. But since then, we've like tried to reconnect and it hasn't always worked. It's been years of trying to reconnect, not connecting. Sometimes we'd see each other, sometimes we wouldn't. And what I felt in all of these situations was increasingly that this person had an idea of me that was no longer accurate to who I was. And that as much as I tried, I couldn't break this person out of this idea of me. And so I was very wary of the relationship and it was very unboundaried and very just a lot of energy, let's say that. But it was both of our birthday on Sunday. So 3 days before, because I know birthdays can be sensitive and I didn't want to reach out to this person on their birthday. 3 days before I said, hey, I just want you to know I've been thinking about you a lot. I don't know where we last left things, but I love you very much. And I wanted you to know that I'm really, it looks like you're really happy and I'm really happy that you're happy. And they reached out to me on our actual birthday, sent me a song that we used to listen to. And I sent them like on YouTube and I sent them one back thinking, oh, great. We're having a nice spirited whatever. And they their next move was to say, I tried to hit the ground running with you last time we talked and you were very shallow and I'm pissed at you over text on my birthday. God. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I don't really hit the ground running with anyone anymore. I'm kind of really become a very protective person since we've known each other, self-protective. And I'm sorry if that hurt you. I didn't really understand why you were reaching out. And I probably should have, like, very apologetic. And then she wrote back, the perfect works don't count. I know you better than other people. I'm not a Jen fan. And it just got insane so fast. And I was like, I don't know. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to offend you when you reached out to me last. I really didn't know you needed me. I've been really busy. I'm sorry. I probably could have done better. Historically, I haven't always felt so safe in our relationship because it's been so tumultuous. And the unsafe comment made this person so angry that they wrote back, you do you. I'm not owning that. Maybe you're just a fucking psychopath.
Jesus Christ.
I know. It was so intense. And even talking about it was so intense. And I was so upset by it. Like, I was like, oh my God. And then as I wrote the person back, because I've been doing a lot of work. There's this great actual book by Sharon Salzberg and Robert Thurman, the two Buddhist scholars, teachers, about loving your enemies. And I've been doing a lot of work about loving your enemies. So I wrote her back.
Yeah,
the whole meditation. Let's love our enemies, because if they're in a good place, actually that's better energetically for everything, right?
Right.
So I wrote her back and I said, it sounds like this isn't repairable. It sounds like you're really, really angry. I'm so sorry. I wish you all the good things in your life. And that's it. And then I blocked the phone number because I don't want to hear from this person again. But I really started thinking about the things that people hold on to that you don't even think about anymore. Because then my sister called me around this time, and my sister was like, because I just burst into tears when my sister called me, and my sister knew who this person was, obviously. Mm-hmm. And she said, you're just living in two different realities. She was like, what are you holding on to from 30 years ago?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, nothing. Like, nothing. Yeah. I will take accountability and try to make amends for anything I've done, but there's got to be a line on that stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there does have to be, but you know, there isn't necessarily for people. I mean, it's funny you should bring it up, because yesterday there was a comment on the blog that really bummed me out and made me think about, mentioned a person without naming her who I had a very bad relationship with. It. And the commenter said, you know, if she ended it nicely, but she was like, this woman hated you.
Was this the comment where the person said they thought you were a fucking bitch?
A fucking bitch. And in fact, the biggest bitch they'd ever met. The biggest bitch they'd ever met. Now, I mean, I will own up to my bitchiness. I will own up to occasionally, you know, maybe more than occasionally being kind of a bitch, but like the biggest bitch. And this person who said it is like a giant bitch. So to even be a bigger bitch than her. But it just got me thinking, like, you know, about people who hate you.
Yeah.
People who spend the time hating you. And, you know, this woman, I've heard before that she's badmouthed me. You know, but I'd sort of forgotten about that. It was a long time. It was 20 years ago, you know, but she, you know, she's holding on to that rage. And yesterday I just felt it. And I felt like such fucking shame.
That was the psychopath comment. It like brought me back to a person I no longer am, that I'm not. And, you know, maybe I wasn't the best friend when I was 20. And that's what I said. I said, I'm so sorry if I hurt you. I know this is no excuse, but I was hurting too, you know?
Yeah.
And we can't change the past, right? And that's just part of being an adult, is knowing, like, having the grace with yourself to say, okay, what I did was not the best. You know, I fucked up. I have the power to move on and do better. I can grow. That is something I have in my capacity, to not be that person anymore. And not even getting into the details of, was I that bad? You know, because who gives a shit? You were that bad to somebody.
You were that bad, yeah.
You made somebody else feel bad. And so the getting into the details of, was it that bad? Or trying to like find like a slippery way out of it. It's okay to just be like, I sucked. Sorry.
No, and I think you are an excellent apologizer.
Thank you.
I think if anything, you're an over-apologizer. But you always own your shit.
It's true. Just
always own your shit. It's really true. And, you know, there's a great AA saying, clean up your side of the street.
Right.
And that's all you can do with people like that. That's all I can do with the people. Just not be an asshole, not do anything else.
Right. And you can't worry about their side of the street because you can't control it. The amends is not about them giving you forgiveness.
Yeah.
And I mean, and also the way that we kind of just blow things up in our minds and the way we distort them and project things. And, you know, I think that this person thinks that I have a perfect life is what
I think. It sounds like envy is at the root of some of this.
Or just like pain that I didn't bring them along with me. You know, we also wrote a column together. We hosted a radio show together. Mm. We were creative equals at a certain point. And I think that, and you know, I write about this a lot in the book. I write about envy a lot in the book, about people who started at the same level as I did and became, in my book, I'm writing about this. You know, the only thing I ever talk about, really. And I think about people who, it's weird to see people who started at the same time that you did, who just surpassed you in every way that you wanted to be, you thought, you know, the smart writers who got to go and do smart things, you know, that's over for me. That window is closed in that way. I'm not going to have that kind of career. And the ways that, because of how you were made up, you got distracted, or, you know, it was just your path to live. It was a different path. It was, you know, And I think about that a lot, but that also how much when you know really successful people, when you're one of their close people, it's not, we know this. We know that none of this is so great. It does, it looks great from the outside, but it's actually not great. So it's like coming to terms with all of that.
It's true. It's true. We have both watched people explode.
Yes.
You know, we've both watched people who were close friends become really big deals. And on the one hand, it does feel like the movie montage, you know, where like the calendar pages are flipping and like they're getting more and more famous and they're on the cover of Time magazine.
Yes, yes.
And,
yes.
You know, all of that. And on the one hand, it's like that. And it's kind of exciting to watch this thing happen for your friend. And then the other side of it is just like, nah, nah,
you know. Also, I think what this person was saying to me without actually being able to say it was, where do I fit?
Well, when she said, I'm not a Jen fan, that just felt, that's so clearly coming from something inside of her.
Whew. And it's just like, and I try to be not a person who has like a performative external identity. Like, I mean, you know, it's not external, a performative, like even social media, I try not to be too like, you know, I hate self-promotion. So it was like, it really just kind of got me.
Yeah.
It was like,
yeah.
But, you know, just where do I fit in your life? Or, hey, I really need you. If this person had come to me in these years and said, I miss you, I need you, I want to talk to you, or anything like that, anything that even smelled or sounded anything like that, I would have shown up.
Yeah, but you know what's so sad is she probably, not through any fault of your own, thought you wouldn't.
Right.
She just thought she wouldn't.
Right.
And that fed the anger.
Yep.
This being convinced that you didn't care. People are terrified to ask for help. And it's the weirdest thing because people love to be asked for help.
No, totally. People love to be asked for help. But also, people love to, like, I don't know if everybody loves this, but I've also been talking to, in this research of my life, I've been talking to a lot of my high school friends because that was an early college friends, because that was a really tough time for me that I kind of blocked out. And mm-hmm. I wanted to know what I was, because I have some friends from high school and I'm like, I can't believe you still fucking know me. I was a disaster. I can't believe, why do you, like, what happened between us? Tell me. And I've had some very cathartic conversations with old friends who were open to these kinds of conversations where we've been able to really talk through the girls we were and the mm-hmm. dynamics in the friendship and what, and it's helped me so much as a person to forgive myself, to apologize, to love these people now. Like, I now have like two or three friends from high school who I feel really close to in present day.
That is so nice. You know, I did a similar thing when I was working on the book I decided not to write.
Yeah.
And interviewed people who I'd work with at Sassy, people I'd work with at Lucky.
Yeah.
And I felt like it was a little bit of my apology tour.
Yes. Yes.
You know, because you hear things and it's like, holy God, I did that. I said that.
Yeah.
Like, and these are people who didn't hate me, you know, which is kind of, you know, amazing.
Right. Right. No, I know. And it is this thing that, there was this thing on this podcast, the Loving Our Enemies. It was on Being. They interviewed the Sheryl Salzberg and Robert Thurman. And one of the things that she was saying is that, how do we get the energy to be compassionate to other people? How do we get the energy to be a good person, to forgive our enemies? And the resourcefulness to care about others has to come from having energy, and self-preoccupation zaps all our energy, right? It comes from feeling so undone, so unworthy, incapable of giving. And forgiving ourselves and recognizing, yeah, it happened. I was wrong. I'm going to go on now, do different things. That's the way we get to be compassionate people and kind people. It has to start from forgiveness, because self-forgiveness, because if not, we're stuck and we can't have energy without being stuck.
Who was it?
Who
came on the podcast and said, you've got to sit at the table with all of your past selves?
Oh, Grace Bonney. No, was it Grace Bonney? Grace Bonney. Maybe it was Grace Bonney.
Like, it sounds like Grace Bonney, because I thought that was so wise.
Yeah.
you know, to have love for your past selves. I mean, I could just be hanging out on the sofa, minding my own business. And then all of a sudden, something I did 25 years ago or something I said 15 years ago will pop into my head and I will just cringe.
Yes.
I'll just cringe. And it's like taking that moment of being like, you were who you were. Your circumstances were what they were. You're not that way now. And that's all you can be.
And just having that and letting it move on, because if you are just turning all of your anger and rage inward, which most anger, even if we're not aware of it, a lot of people are, a lot of women are, a lot, you know, I hate all that self-loathing. It's exhausting and it keeps you actually from being the person you want to be. So it seems counterintuitive to give to yourself first, right? It seems like, oh, that makes me a selfish person. But actually, no, because you can't do any of the other stuff if you're not caring about yourself first.
It's like taking the oxygen on the airplane before you give the oxygen to your child.
It's exactly right. I've been listening to this podcast called Dead Eyes. Have you heard about this?
Mm-mm.
Oh my God, it's so amazing. And I haven't listened to all of it enough to like know exactly how it all plays out. But the conceit of this podcast is this comedian or this actor / comedian.
Tom Hanks. Yes. I do know all about this.
He was cast in Band of Brothers like 20 years ago or whenever it came out. Tom Hanks is directing and he's cast and he goes to like be on his first day of the shoot and he gets a call from his agent and says, actually, Tom Hanks has fired you. You have been fired from this show. And he says, why? And he said, and the agent says, well, because Tom Hanks thinks you have dead eyes.
Like the most America's sweetheart rejects you.
So it winds up being a multi-season podcast. I mean, this is the kind of thing that's like could have gone so wrong, but it's all in the execution, right? Mm-hmm. It winds up being a multi-season podcast where people are talking about having people hate them, criticism, rejection, you know, all of these ways that our careers play out and like the things that like just stick in your craw, how you hear like 40 nice things, but it's the one bad thing that you cannot shake. And anyway, the whole podcast over 3 seasons is leading up to what ultimately happens, which is he gets Tom Hanks on the show, which I have not listened to that yet because I want to have that build up first. But he gets Tom Hanks to come on and talk to him. So he gets this moment that we're talking about, the apology tour or whatever. He gets that moment of being like,
amazing.
You know, so what about my eyes, really?
You know? I know Tom Hanks, I believe I read a little thing about it, is that Tom Hanks, of course, had no memory of ever doing this.
Right.
But
well, that's the thing. That's the other thing. We're all living in these totally different realities. But speaking of Tom Cruise, I watched Jerry Maguire the other night. Have you watched Jerry Maguire recently?
I have. And you know, I am not a Tom Cruise fan, but it's hard to hate Tom Cruise in that movie.
It's hard to hate Tom Cruise in that movie. It's equally hard to think why Renee Zellweger goes and is with him. Everything about that movie is so fucking like, I am now like, when I watched that movie, I went to see that movie in the theater. So I must have been like 20, 22, something like that, early 20s. Mm-hmm. And the middle-aged ladies, there's like, remember, there's her sister and her middle-aged lady group.
Angry, all her divorced sister friends. Angry, so angry.
And the whole time I was watching it this time, I was like, oh, they're right. They're just making sense. These are the stars of this movie.
That's hilarious.
Like, seriously, every time the sister said something that's supposed to be like, wah, wah, I'm like, the sister's right. He's drunk. He's your boss. He grabbed your tit. This is not a guy you're supposed to love. Like, this is, you know?
No, it's really true. You're absolutely right.
It's so unbelievable to watch things. I mean, I think that was a different time. So it's not just about my advanced age. So, but it's weird to watch things through a totally different lens and be like, oh God, you're being so stupid, Renee Zellweger. And honestly, if that movie went on 5 years, Tom Cruise in that movie with no therapy would have definitely cheated on her and left her after things started to get tough. Like, let's be honest. There's no fucking fairy tale like that in real life.
That's hilarious. That's really hilarious.
Yeah. So yeah, that was my big revisit of Jerry Maguire through a new lens.
Very good. Well, I have an exciting thing to report.
Tell me.
I got a writing assignment, and much to my surprise, I accepted it because I typically do not accept writing assignments because I don't want to write. That would make me have to write. But I liked the idea of the assignment and I liked the woman who assigned it. So I wrote a piece and I sent it to you this morning and it was very nice because you liked it. And then I sent it to the editor and she liked it too. And I've been feeling like I don't know how to write anymore. Like I really don't know how to write anymore. And so then it made me feel really good.
Well, you should, because the piece is very good. And I read it and I was like, yes, this, I expected it with all of the lead up to be, and I can't write anymore and all of this to be bad. I expected to be like, okay, I'm going to give this an hour of my time. I'm going to spend some time with this. And I opened it and I was done with it in 5 minutes. And I was like, this is great. Send it to the editor, because it is. The thing is, you've built it up so big in your head, and it's not. Once you do it, you're like, oh, it's just words.
I did the same thing to the editor. I was like, please do not be shy about asking me to do any revises. I know it will need your sharp editorial eye, you know, and I meant it, you know, and so it's a really nice feeling to feel like I know how to write again.
You do.
You know, that, or that it didn't go away, you know.
It's just a job like anything else. It's just like cleaning the countertops. It's the same fucking thing. It's just a job.
But the thing is, like, I think the thing about me is that I'm a smooth writer. Like my sentences go down very easy.
Yes.
But then I wonder if they have enough like weight, you know, if people think I'm a good writer just because all the sentences work well together. But in fact, I don't have a message.
I don't feel that you don't have a message, but that's always something you can add in a revision if you're feeling that way. You've gotten all the bones down. Like that's not a reason not to do it to begin with, because that's something like my book right now is just a lot of story. And next month, before I turn it in, my plan is to add the oomph and the messaging and the weight and the smarts. Right. You can't do everything at once.
You can't do everything at once. It's really true.
You can't. And you can't expect to do everything at once. I mean, this is again, you know, I talk about this a lot, like how people will tell me that my husband's a better writer than I am. And people are just not shy. Somebody said to me the other day, this person who's not a writer, okay, said to me the other day, you know, you write like me. Like you write like how I tell stories. Like your husband is like, you know.
Why do people do that?
I don't know.
Why do people do that? I mean, I haven't read enough that Alex has written to really make a judgment about this. But like, you're such a great writer. Why would people say the shit they say? And I say that as a person who says shit sometimes.
I know. I've started to really think about this recently. Like, because I've been watching my kids' sensitivity to every single thing I say. Like they're in that age where it's just like, ugh, you know, and I'm like, I didn't mean anything by that. I was just telling you, you know, I thought maybe you should pull your collar out of your sweatshirt. It was tucked in. You think I look bad. You think I look horrible.
Oh,
you know, and like, I just realized like the people just say words like that. They don't, that feel like that nobody's really thinking about, like nobody's sitting there going, huh, I wonder how this will land. You know, I wonder if Jen, because I think this person just thought I was, that they were relating to me and they were saying, you know, if I were a writer, I'd write like you.
You know? I know, like, yeah, go try.
Exactly.
Go try, asshole.
It's fine. It's totally fine. I am really excited to be old and to be starting to care a little, to have at least a quicker recovery from these things that used to be tormenting for like a really long time, you know?
Yeah, no, that's really true. And you were very articulate. I made you read on the podcast what you said about giving more shits. But that is a respect in which, like, I think we do give less shits.
Yes.
Like, you just... And also I feel like, you know, as bad as I felt yesterday thinking about this woman who truly could not stand the sight of me. I mean, I've never been around a person who, like, I could tell could not stand the sight of me.
Right.
It's just like, you know, she was an asshole and I was going through a really rough time. You know, I wasn't easy.
life is complicated and sometimes it hurts and sucks and people are complicated. And, you know, yeah, I was, there was something on LinkedIn, which, oh God, why do I ever go over to that hellscape? But, you know, it prompts you, it tricks you. You have to go over. It's like, you know, whatever. I went over and there was like somebody who I know hates me. It was like a news flash somebody had shared about someone who I'm just, I know can't stand me. I just know it. And it was unpleasant to see it, you know, like I kind of was like, oh, I was like, it was like the sun shining too bright in your eyes. I was like, ah, and it was like this person had just had a big accomplishment and I had forgotten about this in person entirely. And then I saw this and, you know, it would be passive aggressive to congratulate a person who hates you. But I thought it in my mind, oh, good for her. I thought that, oh, good for her. Good for her. I'm happy that she's found something that she seems to be really good at and is, you know, excelling in. It's fantastic.
Love your enemies.
Love your enemies. Love your enemies. That is the thing.
Yeah, it really is. God, what was I just thinking about? I haven't said what was I just thinking about in a while, but I was thinking, hang on, should we go to a commercial?
Oh yeah, perfect time. Let's now's a good time to take a quick break for some ads.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
And we're back.
It's just seconds later and I still can't remember what I was going to say, but it had to do with the woman who hated me. And I guess another part of it is like you get past needing to be like, okay, I got to make this person not hate me.
Yeah.
Like, what can I do? I've got to somehow like, I have to like clear the record. And it's like, no, you don't really get to do that. Like they, you know, and I think it's so interesting because you're also talking about getting in touch with old friends. And like, there are a couple of people I've fallen out with and one person in particular over the past few years where I feel like I've got to take some responsibility for what happened. And I occasionally think about reaching out to this person, but then after talking to you, I don't think I will.
Yeah, I don't know. You can't change somebody else's reality. And also what this person ultimately wants from me is more than I'm willing to give. They want me to be a person I used to be. They want to not feel threatened by me, which I'm not threatening, you know, but that's how they feel. I can't change the reality. When I think about reaching out to people in my life, I think about what's my motivation in doing this. Is it, will this cause this person more harm than good, you know? And that's something like I've been thinking about another friend who I really want to reach out to who's turning 50 this year. And I don't know if I'll contact him because I think it might hurt him more to be, I think it might be like disruptive to his life. And, you know, I don't want to do that. That's selfish.
Yeah. You know, I have, you know, one of the reasons I don't believe in dumping friends is because there's one who I dumped years ago and I really thought the relationship was toxic. I took bad advice from somebody who said, you've got to cut people out from your life. You know, we still have several mutual friends. And at a certain point after, you know, I had seen her since this happened and I had expressed some, you know, contrition for how I handled things, but she still doesn't want anything to do with me and I don't blame her. And so a few weeks ago, and she friended me on Facebook at some point.
Okay.
Which was nice, you know, and I went to go, she had some of her work in the New Yorker.
Okay.
And she was mentioned in the article. And I thought, well, that's really fucking awesome. And so I thought, does she want to hear from me? So I go to Facebook and I saw that she had actually, like, we weren't friends anymore. And I thought I could go to one of our mutual friends and get her email. But I thought, like, it's going to cause her pain to hear from me, but she doesn't want to hear from me. She doesn't like me. She's never going to like me. You know, even if I express regret for what I did, she's never going to fucking like me. And you don't get to just, like, set, you know, you'd be sending this note off more for yourself than you would be for her.
That's it. You'd be trying to pave over your potholes, right? You know?
Yep. Yep. And there's no paving over them. They're there.
It's just the way it is. And, you know, that's the thing. You go where it's warm, right? You go where it's warm. Don't go where you're not wanted. Like, that's just a fucking, that's just like a weird people pleasing thing. Like showing back up again and again to the place where you know the person hasn't changed. You know you're not welcome. You know, I had this really beautiful birthday with so many friends reached out to me. I felt so loved. I really just felt like
so nice.
It was so nice. And I had this one bad thing happen to me. And then after that happened, for about an hour, I just was sort of living in the headspace of the person I used to be, which is a person who thought I was a piece of shit. I really thought for years I was a piece of garbage, didn't deserve love, didn't deserve friends, didn't know how to have a friend, was always surprised when somebody liked me. And a friend who I haven't talked to in a couple of months, who I'm in very good terms with, but I haven't talked, we've just been busy. And I thought, oh, I know she hasn't reached out to me probably because I'm such a piece of shit and haven't texted her back. Because sometimes I'm a really bad texter backer. I can really fucking forget to text somebody back and I feel so bad about it anyway. So I had this whole narrative that I built in my mind after the psychopath comment. And do you know that at the end of the day, like, I got the nicest message from her. Like, I love you so much. I wish we were talking more, but we're both so busy. And then I was able to live in reality again, which is, oh, I put in the effort to the people who love me and I feel safe with, and I get that back, and that's it. That's the best we could do. That's all.
That's what you get. And the loose ends are the loose ends, and you just have to live with them. You know, Paul and I talk about this because he went through, he had a lot of success, but also went through a very sloppy time.
Yes.
Like I did. And he's just like, you know, I worked with people who think I'm crazy.
Right.
You know, that happened when I worked with them. There's nothing I can do about that. You know, and it's all acceptance. Everything is acceptance.
It's all acceptance. It's all just really coming to a real peacefulness about what you've done, accepting yourself for your wounds and the pain that you caused other people. And in that self-acceptance, you can accept other people. Like, that's how it works, right? No, I remember I was in therapy a little while ago and I was talking about how much I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the podcast, or who gives a shit about therapy, but here we go.
Nobody ever wants to hear about therapy and nobody ever wants to hear about your dream.
Exactly. Here we go. With that set up. Anyway, I was talking about how much I hated weakness, right? I was like, oh, I just hate the weakness. And the therapist was like, it's interesting that you're framing it that way. Like, what you're seeing in somebody else is not weakness. I would say it's their wounds. And I would say that you're uncomfortable with their wounds because you're uncomfortable with your own. And yep. It was just this very easy and simple therapy thing. And I was like, oh yeah. And now I apply it to everything, whether it's, you know, my mother's weird behavior, wounded, you know, whatever it is. I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm reacting because that's making me feel uncomfortable. The woundedness of this person is making me uncomfortable because it's triggering my own stuff.
That's interesting. And it makes me think about the friend I was talking about last week who's about to make a disastrous financial decision and why that plagued me so much.
Right. And last week we just talked about you making a financial decision that made you feel really hurt and uncomfortable and angry. And it probably hit all of that.
Yeah.
If it's hysterical, it's historical, as they say.
we're bringing the AA knowledge today.
I know. Oh my God, addiction. Speaking of nothing, let's talk about Better Things.
Oh my God, the best show. The best show. Pamela Adlon, please
just come on our show.
Come on our show. It would mean a lot.
Maybe we can get Pamela Adlon the way that guy got the Dead Tom Eyes Hanks. Guy got if he can get Tom Hanks, but I think we have to like base the whole show on Pamela Adlon.
We're gonna have to come up with some Pamela Adlon adjacent material
or lore. What would be a Pamela Adlon lore? No, it is. What is so remarkable about this show?
Wait, let's just say what it is for people who haven't watched it before. It's a show about a working actress in Hollywood. You know, like not super, super famous, but working.
Yes.
Who has three daughters and is divorced and is, you know, going through perimenopause.
Yes.
And like, you know, she's trying to get her pants on and it's not happening.
Right. No, I interviewed somebody today for a different project I'm working on, and we were talking about what is our greatest desire. And our greatest desire is freedom, right? We all desire, like, what fulfills us more than anything? The feeling of freedom and being free. And I watched Pamela Adlon on this show having so much creative freedom. Mm-hmm. Like, because the shows, if you just try to explain what the show is, like, from, you know, top to bottom.
It doesn't sound like much.
It doesn't make even sense. It doesn't make even much sense. And the episodes aren't linear, right? And they don't really make much sense. But every moment and every feeling and everything she's representing in this, it's so brilliant. And it's so relatable in this profound way. Like, I leave feeling kind of shook after watching it, you know?
Well, because she doesn't shy away from shit. I mean, talk about the ugly side of menopause. Like, there was a scene in a previous season where they're at the gym. Pamela Adlon is at the gym with a friend, and the friend's sort of stretching and she's got her legs spread. And Pamela Adlon is like, hey, you. I was like, who else is putting that on a TV?
I know. It was so great. And like, yeah, all of the stuff about how not feeling desirable, being desirable, you know, or feeling like you are desirable, but watching the male gaze be different in terms of you, you know, she addresses all of that friendship, being a member of your family. Oh my God. With her brother.
The scenes with her brother are so perfect. And the scenes with her mother.
Yes.
Dealing with an aging mother.
Yeah.
And apparently that is all very true to life. She has three daughters. She has a mother who sort of lives with them, who's British.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She's just, you know, it's the fifth season of this show, I think. And another thing I like about it is that she looks older than she did in the first season.
Totally.
Like, her body has changed.
Totally. Totally. Well, there's that scene where she's dealing with the costume people for a new movie, mm-hmm. and they're just trying to shove her body into
these costumes,
into these like period costumes, and like they're putting a corset on her, and she's just like, I don't want to be this anymore. I don't want this.
Yeah, no. I mean, and that, you know, the fact that it's kind of showing her journey, she wants to direct more.
Yeah,
and so it really is about, like, you know, doing what you want to do and not trying to perform for others.
Not exactly. I mean, literally and figuratively, but the idea that she has this dream to direct and she wants to move out of acting, and that it's what it is when you're older to have a dream that feels like, maybe, but even to give voice to it is kind of scary, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Because you feel it's not like when you're young. I mean, in some ways it's similar, but when you're older, we've talked about this, there's so much baggage around it. It's like, oh God, could I, you know? And she really, I think this season, she's really getting at that, the new relationship with ambition, the sort of purity of those dreams, because mm-hmm. you know, you're not doing it for any other bullshit anymore. You're doing it because it's the purest thing that you might want to do. And you're afraid to give voice to it. Like I just said.
Yep. Yep. No, I think it's amazing. And I think the fear inhibits a lot of people, and it's cool to watch her do it on this show.
Yeah, totally. Speaking of bodies, can I tell you something that we have not talked about, but that I really is really fucking driving me crazy. So I've lost a lot of weight in the last year. Like, but whatever. I know this is annoying. I've lost a lot of weight. It is not because I wanted to. It's because I have all of these perimenopause related stomach issues. And like every morning I eat butter because I'm trying to keep weight on my body. Like I am mm-hmm. desperately trying to keep weight on. I am like trying to eat bulk foods in this very narrow window of foods that I can eat.
Right.
Do you know how many fucking people comment on my body?
Oh, I'm sure.
It is
all the time.
It is nonstop. It is hurtful. It is, you know, oh my God, your skin and bones. It comes from these weird places, you know, like I keep having to respond like, well, try not eating for a year.
Yeah.
Nobody would talk to me like this if I had gained 20 pounds.
No, nobody has said a word to me about having gained weight. And I do think it's true. And I remember when I was super depressed and got and lost a ton of weight, it was the same thing. Oh, your body looks so sick.
I know.
Yeah, sick. I'm sick.
You got it right. I'm literally sick. Like I can't keep food down. I can't keep food down. And I'm trying. And people just cannot stop commenting on it. And the concern is one thing that's already obnoxious. But it's more the, oh my God, your arms are amazing. And I'm like, they're sticks. My arms are fucking sticks because there's no fat on my body because I'm not supposed to be this weight.
Yeah. No, people don't.
I know.
I don't even know. I don't even know. It is. You know, I've had a woman I'm very close to who had an eating disorder. And, you know, once you've had an eating disorder, you struggle with it your whole life.
Right.
And at one point she was very thin and she said, you know, it's just people are always complimenting. People are always telling me like how thin my fingers are. And, you know, I was like, I got to tell you, like, it's not all compliments. Like people are actually concerned about you, but what you choose to hear is.
Right. No, I mean, I don't choose to hear any. I was at a place with my body before I lost all this weight that I was happy. I was working out every morning. I was like, I was fine with it. Like, it was like, mm-hmm. I was having like a middle-aged thickening here and there, but it wasn't, you know, it was like, whatever. I was fine with it. I had really reached a place of like body acceptance, I think. And I was, I think I was like a size 8, 10, you know, bigger than I was in my younger years, but you know, whatever. I was fine. And people don't realize it. Like then, you know, you start off a conversation like that. Someone hugs you. They're like, oh my God, you're so bony. And then you're just kind of self-conscious. Like then I'm like, what am I supposed to take up more space here? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, it's just, it's not good. I say this to my kid all the time. Do not ever comment on somebody's body ever, no matter what, nothing good. Bad, nothing. Just don't make a comment about somebody's body, their birthmarks, their hair. Just don't fucking do it. Just leave that shit alone. Leave that shit alone. Their teeth, nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. So I wanted to bring that because it's really been upsetting to me because it's also like, I didn't do this on purpose.
I know, but can I just say, because I've gained weight, I'm like, Romolini's, shut the fuck up.
I know you do feel that way.
And I think that the fact that I'm thinking Romolini needs to shut the fuck up is behind the way that all those people are being. Yes. Because there is this kind of like, oh, aren't you thin?
I know.
You didn't do anything but like have a really fucked up stomach for a year.
I know.
No, I know. I know. And I do empathize with you. And the fact that I do also have that reaction proves the point that what you're saying is true.
Totally. And I get it. I totally get it. Because the way this fucking world is, we really like a skinny, skinny, skinny woman who clothes are hanging off of. And we like a person. We like women to take up a little amount of space. We always have, basically.
Well, Paul always says, like, how weird that we've chosen to what's the very simple word I'm looking for? We put people who like we admire people, admire, that's the word. Mm-hmm. We admire people for their ability not to eat.
Yeah.
Like of all the things we could admire people for, their brains, their kindness, their generosity. We admire them for their ability not to eat.
No. And all of the people that we see that we hold up as the models of beauty, this fucking skinniness, those people are starving. I am starving. I am starving. I heard Julianne Moore say, I've been hungry for 20 years. I heard her give I'm starving, but I can't eat anything because it makes my stomach, it puts me into such stomach duress, gastrointestinal duress, not to be disgusting, that I can't move through the world. So it's like either I eat and stay home and never near a toilet, or I don't eat at all, or I eat like one type of paleo bread with a lot of butter on it, which is basically what I eat all the time. So it's a bummer. But yeah, I mean, that's what I keep saying to my friends who say this. I'm like, if you want this, man, if this is the life you want, like there's zero fucking pleasure in this. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, it's funny, you know, speaking of body types, I get all these catalogs. I get thousands of catalogs. Mm-hmm. Maybe everyone does. And I was looking at a catalog for a brand and I was like, that's weird. They only have skinny models. Because I do think people are getting a little bit better about, you know, the occasional size 8 model. Madewell is being amazing right now. They've been using lots of larger models, but I think that shit's beginning to happen, like in a real meaningful way. It is going to make such a difference for a generation of girls.
Well, even Euphoria.
Yeah, it's true.
Even Euphoria has a lot of body diversity, like a lot. And, you know, I mean, big tits, small tits, skinny, thicker, you know, and you know, thick is a, the Kardashians brought thick into a whole different dimension. I mean, although they are fucking so terrible. Oh my God. I watched the Kanye show. I know nobody would ever watch this who listens to this show. I should probably not even talk about it, but I did watch the Kanye documentary.
Well, you know, I watched the beginning of it. I thought it was fascinating and I might watch the rest, but we were going to talk about Kanye, you know, and I'm really, I'm a diagnosed bipolar. You know, I have only had one.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Period in my life when I was was bipolar, but if you ever worry, it's your diagnosis.
Right.
I think I'm much more of a depressive, but there you have it. But it's painful sometimes to hear the things that man says, and I just know he's in deep, deep mania.
I know. I know. Well, what's so beautiful about that documentary about Kanye, I think it's called Genius, is they have all of this footage of him, so much footage. I can't even believe how much, because he had a guy just following him around from like his teens. So you see him with retainers in, just this earnest kid who's super ambitious, who loves his mother and like has this incredible relationship with his mother. And his mother seems incredible as a woman because, you know, I'm so fucked up that you hear about somebody dying after like a plastic surgery and you think a certain thing about them, but actually she's this smart, wise, loving, careful, thoughtful mother with him. And it's really amazing because there's all this footage of her and their relationship. And you watch him trying to get his music sold at Rockefeller and Jay-Z and partners at that company don't like Kanye because Kanye is not the version of masculinity that they are used to and that they want to put out, right? Mm-hmm. So this is really interesting because he's kind of this sensitive rapper who's talking about his feelings, right? And they don't want him. And he keeps, but they want his beats, right? So he makes beats for them. So he keeps going back in. At a certain point, he goes in with a boombox and his CDs, and he just starts playing them in different offices, in the Rockefeller offices, just making them like trying to get attention. And it's an amazing study of ambition. It's an amazing study of somebody just fucking put, because talent, you obviously need the hustle. You're never going to get anywhere. Yeah, and he's just pushing this boulder up the hill. And there's this one scene where he raps for the first time for Jay-Z. And I cried watching it. It was like, it was so moving to me to watch this kid have his dream come true. And, you know, and then, you know, he gets into this horrible car accident. He hustles through the whole thing. He raps with, you know, his jaw wired shut. Like there's physical trauma from this. You could start to see this as an older person where this guy started, who probably had the potential for a lot of mental health issues. And you could start to see what compounds that, right?
Yeah.
Fame, his mother dying, the only person in his life who really gets him, the trauma of that. And you start to just see where he goes wrong throughout this documentary. And it's really beautiful. I really loved it as like a study of a lot of different things and just as a life and how all the aspects of our life like build up. If we have some stuff going on, how that can be exacerbated by the events in our lives, you know?
Oh, for sure. Like, you know, being the editor-in-chief of a fashion magazine was not the best thing to be if you're manic.
Yes.
And, you know, and you do think, like when he thought he wanted to run for president, like you suddenly think you have skills you don't have. Like Jane Pauley became bipolar because of steroids. She took steroids. And she suddenly thought she could be, her husband was like, she told me she wanted to design a line of clothing. And that's when I got worried.
Right.
Because you think you can do everything. So if you're someone like Kanye, who never has to be around anyone who is telling him the truth, you're going to have a really rough time getting better. And, you know, then there's also the fact that people love their mania and don't want to medicate it away.
Right. And also I imagine the adrenaline rush and the dopamine and all of it from putting out art and like having these big explosions of like attention and people, you know, it's really interesting. And like, this is not to say like somebody needs to shut him down. This is dangerous. What he's doing is, you know, a form of domestic violence. Like this is, he's threatening her. He's threatening the guy she's with, which let's not even get into that, but like whatever this is absolutely not okay. Somebody needs to shut this shit down. But thinking about the origins of these stories and also men, we've forgotten how to take care of men because we're kind of like, ugh, I don't give a shit about men. And we don't have really good models for men and their softness and their feelings and like how to like, how to come out of situations like this in that when you're messed up and you need to be soft and vulnerable. And you see this in the beginning of this kid trying to make it in this hyper-masculine world when he's not hyper-masculine. And it's really mm-hmm. interesting. I mean, in toxic masculinity, you know, there's this whole movement toward this is going to sound like the woo-woo-iest thing, but like Liz Plank just wrote a book about mindful masculinity. And I think that we're not helping men and boys learn how to do this. We've kind of forgotten them. And the places that are remembering them are highly toxic. You know, your Joe Rogans, your, mm-hmm. you know, Jordan Petersons, mm-hmm. your Trumps. Those are the Ben Shapiros. Those are the people who are filling this vacuum for men and boys.
Oh, fuck them.
I know, but we've forgotten them. We're like, we're exactly like that. We're kind of like, fuck all men. And the men are like, well, I got to go somewhere. You know?
Yeah. And they're not, yeah, no, it's true. And they got to act some way. And they're, how would they act any differently if they've never, it's never been indicated that they should.
Never been modeled. There's no Alan Alda out here. There's no Judd Hirsch. There's no, they're like my soft man models. I don't know.
Those are two good ones.
Yeah.
Slightly dating, but
a hut like 400 years ago.
Was all done. Sweetie, should we read a couple of reviews? Because we didn't last week.
Oh, we should read a couple of reviews. Oh, yes, we should totally read a couple of reviews. Let's read a couple of reviews.
Let me start. Okay, I'm going to read two and then you read two.
Okay.
Okay, this one is from Karen in Atlanta. Experiencing the unhirable 50s. In 2020, I lost the job I invested so much of myself in for 20 years, and now at 54, I'm still struggling to figure out what's next. Your podcast has been a godsend, so relatable, and hearing Kim's laugh makes me smile every time. Thank you so much for creating content that no one else is talking about and expresses so much of what I'm experiencing and feeling. Kim and Jen, listening to your conversations makes me feel like I'm with my own girlfriends when I can't be. Y'all rock. Super nice.
So nice. Awesome.
Okay, then this one is from Nikki, turning 40 this year. I am turning 40 this year, and I feel like I am learning and laughing along with the big sisters I've always wanted. Love the honesty, feel seen, and favorite podcast right now by far.
Ugh, amazing. Thank you so much, Nikki. Okay, never too young for these ladies, says XR Star.
Czar Star.
Czar Star, sorry, you're right.
Oh, I was just guessing that this one.
Well, I don't know. who knows how to pronounce an X? It's kind of hard. Okay. I'm 31, but feeling old and settled in a 10-year relationship, fired from a big job like Kim, worried about leaving the work world, etc. I love listening to these women. They make me feel more connected to the generation above me and more prepared for what's ahead. I really don't dig the reading reviews on the air, though.
Sorry about that.
Sorry. Well, this is a thing we're doing. We might not do it forever, but thank you. But love you both to pieces, and bravo to Jen for the seamless transition to co-host. No one's ever done it so well. Oh, God. I was really nervous about that transition. Thank you for saying that.
I know. It was seamless.
Oh, I was fucking nervous. I can hear it in my voice. I listened to the first episode recently and I was like, I was so scared. I was like, how do I even do this?
Oh, that's so funny.
I was really nervous to step in with you. Anyway, okay. Where has this podcast been all my life? Says BG143. I recently found your podcast and I haven't stopped listening. I love the conversation and I feel like I finally found the podcast that speaks to me and for me. Keep up the wonderful work and thank you so much. Thank you, BG.
You guys, thank you for writing these reviews. And for those of you who don't know, but have probably figured out by now, if you give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we will read it on the air.
Thank you for listening to Everything Is Fine. We're your hosts. I'm Jen Romolini.
And I'm Kim France.
If you like the show, please rate and review it on all the platforms. It really makes a difference and helps people to find us. If you want to support the show, and we're having actually an event this week, we're on Patreon at patreon.com/everythingisfine. You can email us at everythingisfinethepodcast@gmail.com. We're on Instagram, EIF Podcast. We have a private Facebook group. Everything is Fine, the podcast, I think. We're on Twitter, and you can find Kim on her blog, girlsofacertainage.com, and you can find me on tinyletter.com/Jennifer Romolini, and whoo, I did it.